Welcome to another Bonding Time podcast. Today we have Tom Kozlik of Hilltop Securities. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Brett. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Last time we spoke, probably 6 weeks ago, we talked about the debt ceiling debacle that was surely going to happen. As we sit here on June 7th last week, Congress miraculously passed a bipartisan debt ceiling agreement, sent it to the White House, and was signed off with, at least 2 or 3 days to spare. So here in D.C., that's expedited work and truly miraculous. Just what are your top line impressions of the bill? Anything that caught you off guard in the text as it might apply to the public finance world?
So from the public finance world, I think that the big issue that a lot of folks were wondering about is because there was that $350 billion coronavirus state and local government fiscal recovery fund that came from Washington. And there has been talk for months about some of that COVID aid being rescinded back as part of some kind of deal. Folks were concerned that some of that state and local government money would be clawed back. And the big issue from my perspective, the big thing that I was looking at when I was reading through the 9,900 pages was whether or not that was included. And it's not. Right. So that's one of the big things from a public finance perspective, if not the biggest thing from a public finance perspective, I think that a lot of folks were wondering about.
Yeah, that was a pretty ominous headline that was floating around. So good to see those details were worked out. I think before we dig in, we need to go back to 2011, the Budget Control Act, the last real debt ceiling enormous blow up where extensive cutting legislation was introduced in order to suspend the debt limit. People might recall that as the creation of the modern day sequestration that impacts BABs, et cetera, but we can get into that in a moment. But here, I just wanted to compare and contrast some of the differences in the bills. So the 2011 Budget Control Act, it dangled a carrot or a stick, however you want to look at it, if Congress did not act and produce a deficit reduction bill with at least $1.2 trillion in cuts. I think that's one of the biggest differences between that bill and the current bill. That suspended the debt ceiling through January 1st, 2025, and pretty much just capped federal spending at 2023 levels without the really stick to get such a sequestration, get those cuts across. An interesting quote from an anonymous source of the White House here, Tom. I want to see your reaction to this. Factoring in the adjustments, the White House projects that when veterans funding is set aside, non-defense spending would barely change, with a slight reduction overall from 2023 to 2024 that they estimate to be around $1 billion. I think the big key here is non-political speaking. This bill really doesn't do a whole lot. It caps spending at a generally high level, whereas 2011 sequestration was introduced into modern budgeting, which had a direct impact on BABs, amongst other big programs.
What's your elements in the budget, right?
Yeah. I didn't want to go down the list, but goodness, reductions apply to Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, civil and military pay, et cetera, in 2011. So a much more drastic outcome is my take.
Yeah, I think that lawmakers probably learned from a decade plus ago and probably didn't want to give this legislation the teeth that we saw back with the BCA.
Yes, yes.
And I would add to that, and I think that that is a tremendous, from a federal budget perspective, that's a very, very important point. I think that both then and now, the debt to GDP ratio for the U.S. sovereign is still elevated. Yeah. And I think that what we should be expecting more during budget conversations as opposed to less is that there's going to be talk about how spending is going to come down, not how spending is going to increase. And I think that that is one of the key takeaways for public finance. The key takeaways is that there might be things that U.S. public finance is looking for from Washington, no matter what it is, whether it's things that we're trying to get restored or we're trying to expand. But I think that one of the things that the folks in U.S. public finance need to understand is that the environment that lawmakers are operating in Washington, again, in 2023 and after 2023, just like in 2011 and after 2011, lawmakers are going to be dealing with a time period where they're going to be looking to cut spending and reduce deficits. So that is going to be the backdrop by which everything happens in Washington, not just this budget cycle and or the next election, but in coming budget cycles and in coming election cycles. That's also one of my biggest takeaways as I'm listening to what you're laying out.
I don't want to conflate here that the debt ceiling bill passed with the political crisis that I foresee as we head into the future, but I think this is a good opportunity to mention that a big portion of this bill, it set the framework where Congress needs to pass 12 appropriation bills, spending bills, right, this fall by the end of the fiscal year. This week, the right flank of the Republican Party set up a mini revolt, torpedoing a few easy to pass pieces of legislation, if you will.
Right.
I think that the appropriations fight is going to be ugly this fall. I know that does not have the same market impact that the debt ceiling argument, if it had turned much more ugly, could have had. However, I just think there's going to be continued political instability heading into the 2024 election season. And I don't know what kind of ripple effects that could have on the market. But with that being said, I know that we're in a much better aftermath situation comparative than 2011 when that deal was struck. Is that your overall impression as well?
That's a good point. That's a really excellent point, because
you don't say that often to me, so I appreciate that.
Well, it's because we're sitting here a couple of days after the president signed this,
yeah,
a little over a week after the speaker and the president came to an agreement. And from a market perspective, it seems like, rightfully so, we're back to wondering what the Fed's going to do next week, right? And let me tell you, I remember 2011, that was not the case. There was substantial rating agency actions across the board on the sovereign entity. S&P lowered the U.S. sovereign rating. The rating agencies acted on municipal credits that had a direct and indirect relationship with Washington, D.C., if I remember correctly, mostly. I mean, there was substantial blowback to the market, to credit, during and after the 2011 debt ceiling process. And I don't want to say there's not going to be any market reaction, because there are folks who are wondering what's going to happen with the amount of treasury issuance. But these are just the typical kind of ups and downs that the market wonders about. The market is wondering about what's going to happen with interest rates. The market's going to what happened with supply and demand. I mean, those are the typical ups and downs, I would say. What happened after 2011 was much, much different, much more blowback. Interest rates were much more substantially impacted. It was much different just because not only did 2011 go up to the last hour, and I remember, S&P wrote that one of the reasons of why it is that they downgraded the sovereign rating was just because of how the political back and forth was going. There was a lot more animosity and a lot more unpredictability than in prior years.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think we're taking a step back from the ledge, and it'll be back to the day-to-day political happenings here in D.C. and maybe deal with things that are less affecting the market, which will be a nice turn here. Looking through our notes, Tom, I think this is a good opportunity to answer a few questions that you and I have been receiving since this bill was passed.
Mm-hmm.
Does this have any impact on BAB subsidies?
What I think that question is probably referring to is the fact that during sequestration, the taxable Build America bonds that were issued 10 plus years ago, over, I think, since 2013, if I remember correctly, there's a maybe 5-7% of the subsidy. It was cut by the federal government. And so what this question is probably referring to is if that subsidy is maybe being restored. And I think that this is a perfect example of thinking about the bigger picture of what we're going to be looking at going forward. I guess, first of all, it wasn't included at all. In this deal, things were cut. Things were not added. For that subsidy to have come back, it would have required resources, and they were not adding things as part of this. They were cutting here. The BAB subsidy was not restored. On top of that, I would argue that as part of the larger theme of deficit reduction and cuts more likely coming in the future as opposed to increases in spending. I don't think that something like that's going to happen anytime soon.
And I know something we've exchanged notes about is how much support it took from Democrats on both in both chambers to get this across the line. And my concern that Speaker McCarthy used up all of his political capital that existed in his personal bank account here, if you will. Looking through news articles, this bill, because it was passed in such a strongly bipartisan way, folks are getting excited about maybe an additional package or two next year, later this year, being passed in bipartisan manner. I, for once, am going to take a negative outlook on something. And I think that this honestly will work against that. And I flirted with that earlier in our conversation today, that I think there's going to be the right flank and probably the left flank for the Democrats as well, pushing back against doing something robust like this again. Have you heard or seen anything that could disprove my theory of the case there?
I have not, but I am as if not more skeptical than you.
You have long been skeptical, Tom. So this is where we're actually coming together here.
But that's part of my role is to be right skeptical.
Sure.
And find yeah. right. I think that you're probably right in that there's a long way to go. I guess I'd say there's a long way to go in recovering from this negotiation. I, like you, have been reading about the dust ups going on in the House, especially by Republicans in the House.
Yes.
You know, on the one hand, I would argue that from a big picture political perspective, I would argue that the Republicans won this. It doesn't seem like the Republicans in the House believe that, but I would argue that the Republicans won this because when you think about where things were at the end of last year, going into the beginning of this year, the Democrats were saying and or expecting that there was just going to be a clean debt ceiling agreement, that they weren't expecting to negotiate at all. And I would argue that because some of the central tenets of what it is that the Republicans wanted in this were included in this. Maybe they didn't get everything that they wanted. Well, oftentimes that's the recipe of a good compromise. So, and I think that maybe, but that then again, as you're pointing out, I don't know if this is the beginning of a roadmap of bipartisanship for this, this year going into next year, going into the election for next year. I don't know if I am that optimistic, but I also wasn't at a place where I thought that the Speaker and the White House was going to be able to do what they did over the last week. So maybe you and I could both be proved wrong here, and maybe we could see from a budget perspective by the end of this year, maybe we could see a little more bipartisanship. Maybe.
I mean, the fall is going to prove to be very interesting, but to bring it back to Muni land here, I read an article earlier this week that Jason Smith, who is the chair of Ways and Means, is about to reintroduce a tax package to basically extend the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which expired January 2025, as we've mentioned previously. I think that's going to be a really good test of our case here. We've been talking about debt, deficit reduction, and I can only imagine the price tag on that bill is going to be pretty steep. And I can only imagine that Democrats are going to run in the opposite direction pretty quickly. But for that to get passed, for an extension of those tax cuts to get passed, it's going to take bipartisan action, as we both know, just by the pure and simple math. So that brings me back to the broader thoughts of, is bipartisanship possible? And if so, can that bring key BDA and Muni priorities back into the fold if some type of bipartisan tax package starts to progress? Today, you and I are both pretty pessimistic about that, but I really do think past introduction of this bill in the next week or two, looking forward to fall 23, if they can get over some kind of hurdle and get the first budget passed pre-September 31st, 2023 or whatever, that has not happened in, I don't think, decades, maybe we're wrong. I'm going to be very interested to see how that plays out.
But I think one of the things that is probably one of the more important takeaways from what's happened and what's going to be happening, I would argue, is that as there's a process by which now I believe that we're supposed to be talking to lawmakers about what their priorities should be, right?
Right.
And educating lawmakers about what their priorities should be. And one of the things that I think that we want to make sure doesn't happen is that industry is not caught by surprise the way that the industry, at least I felt, was caught by surprise in 2017 when lawmakers put the tax exemption on the chopping block.
Correct.
Right. One of the things that folks outside DC don't grasp is that while some of the big picture players don't change, a lot of the other players do change. A lot of the other lawmakers in office change. A lot of the staffs change. They might move around, but they still change. And there's still a constant educational process in my mind that needs to happen about what it is that are the public finance priorities, in my opinion. And I'd say that now, even it's less than a week after what's happened, now is absolutely the time that we in the public, we meaning the public finance community, businesses, issuers, state and local government entities, other public finance entities, should be talking to folks in Washington, educating them about the tax exemption and some of the other priorities.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point, considering we have a new chairman in House Ways and Means after decades of Kevin Brady leading the committee. It's a great time to have those conversations. Any other points we may have missed, Tom, or you think we covered this enough?
I think that from a next steps perspective, we'll probably have a better take on the political landscape in another month or so, right? I mean, because outside of what it is that you've really laid out, I think that there are many, many more questions now than answers. I have more questions now than answers from a political landscape perspective. I think that I'm going to need some time not only to digest, but to see how it is that the Speaker and the White House and the Democrats start to react before I'm able to give a better review on kind of where I see things playing out for the rest of the year.
But I mean, I'm glad at least we can have this reflection with the debt ceiling being suspended is a better case than it still being an outstanding issue. So
yeah,
that's I think a better spot than you and I thought we'd be in today, at least.
For sure. I mean, let me tell you, I've been surprised since last Thursday or Friday, a day or before I just did not think that it was going to happen that easily. I mean, it seems to me that the tactic or the strategy of allowing the staff members for a couple of weeks, lay out the groundwork, lay out the big picture themes, and then for the leadership on both sides to come in and negotiate, that seemed to work really well. I'm remembering the picture of President Obama and Speaker Boehner sitting in, I think that they were having a beer, trying to have a beer over this.
Remember?
Yeah. I think the speaker was having a cigarette also.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just a much different, and I know, I mean, that was just all for the cameras for sure. Right. Because, and we didn't see that. We didn't see stuff like that at all. They weren't playing that up at all here. They were really just focusing on the content and really just focusing on the outcome, which was successful. I mean, like you pointed out, they were able to get something done with the days to spare.
Well, good on them. I didn't think we'd say that, but here we are. Tom, as you mentioned, this will be an ongoing conversation. Hopefully 4 to 6 weeks, we can retrospectively look back and not think that we sound like jerks at this juncture. And we can have additional conversations about what to expect in the fall, if that works for you.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, Tom. For having me, Brett.